This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
Hey, it's Long Shots Golf Betting Podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, Kelly Bidlin coming to you. We are putting bets in your account this week. We have lots of outrights, lots of placement market bets. You are going to want to stick around and get these puppies at least some consideration here this week as we head down to Phoenix. The party tournament, going to be great weather. Don't have to worry about it getting all crazy with the rain and people getting, you know, kicked out of there and all of that. It's going to be wonderful. So can't wait to see what everyone has on their card. It's officially golf betting season. We had an outright second this past week. So, Kelly, that was fun.
Hey, that's two already for me, bud. It's like golf season's right back where it's it belongs.
Yeah, super fun.
And shoot, Wes finally lost. So I guess I don't know. Like the world's a little bit more right, I guess, a little bit more balanced out.
Yeah,
we're finishing second. And Wes is winning every week.
I will say this. I look at it like this. It would be one thing if Lowry had pissed it away, but like he just got beat. Like Rory just played awesome, and
Rory was incredible.
So it's like I'm okay with that. Like it would piss me off more if he just went out there and like was just hacking shots all over the course or something, whatever. But like Rory just won the tournament. He's one of the three best players in the world, so he's just going to go win tournaments sometimes. And so, kind of is what it is. Wes, did you take anything away from the tournament this past week?
Yeah. Look, course form, I think, can kind of be overrated at certain events when they're now signature events. And obviously, Rory had never really shown that well in the limited times he played at Pebble Beach, but was terrific over the weekend. Really, really, I think, took the course apart with the driver. And that's very much what he can do with those wide fairways out there at Pebble and Spyglass, more so Pebble, of course. But yeah, look, condensed leaderboard, and then Rory kind of put it to bed beginning on the back nine. So you had Lowry in there, you had Sepp Straka in there, you had Tom Kim in there before he put one in the water on 18. Billy Horschel made a little run. My nearest guy was Taylor Pendriff. He finished top 10, just never really made anything on the back nine on Sunday. So not my best tournament, even though Pebble Beach has been very good to me over the last few years. It was not this past weekend.
Yeah, Kelly, for me, take out of it, you know, as we say, and we've said this for years on this thing, so I don't feel guilty anymore when people will be like, oh, you lost all your money this week. It's like every outright I bet, I back it up with some sort of placement deal. It's every single week. I don't want to be the dude that comes away empty-handed. So I had a top 10 on Lowry. It didn't quite get me back to even this week, but a very, very small loss. And so it's fine. You know, would I have liked to have had the 66-1 hit? Sure. But, yeah. You know, we'll take the top 10 and kind of move on here and try to keep the bankroll at least as healthy as possible.
Yeah, good on you. That's smart golf betting right there by Matt Brown. I usually cover a lot of my outrights. I covered every other outright on my card last week except for Shane Lowry. So a big old zilch for me coming out of that with Shane. I didn't do any hedging whatsoever. So big old losing tournament, and we move on. We move on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, it's a tournament in which now that when they made it an elevated event this year, I mean, I think it's good for the tournament in general, right? I mean, you get more people showing up. You obviously get one of the, like, you know, that was one of Rory's statements after that. He's like, you know, it's very nice to get a win here at one of the cathedrals of golf and all that. It's like that tournament had kind of become a circus. It kind of become like a sideshow, and some of the guys didn't really want to go and play it anymore and stuff. And so I like the, hey, amateurs only get two rounds. Last two rounds, you're playing for the elevated prize pool and all the things like that. And I'm okay with them making that tournament elevated as opposed to, you know, what, 2 years ago we had the waste management be elevated and stuff like that. Like, I'd rather have Pebble Beach, you know, be elevated in the grand scheme of things.
Well, the waste management, yeah. The waste management really doesn't need to be elevated because it's always a good field because it's always the lead into the Super Bowl, right? You know, so like this week, I think we have like 11 of the top 25 in the official world golf rankings. That's a pretty darn good field, you know, for any tournament. And then with Pebble Beach, they did the Pro-Am 2 days, but a lot of like there were still a few celebrities, but a lot of them were athletes or guys that are very much lower handicaps or that pay the price to go ahead and be in that Pro-Am. So you didn't have Bill Murray. You didn't have Ray Romano. So a lot of people like that. A lot of people don't, but it certainly made it go by a little bit faster because the professionals, I guess, they slow up the play enough over the weekend.
I feel like the only person I saw was, but I saw her a million times, was Condoleezza Rice.
Right.
I think is
a member there and then from the Bay Area. But yeah, you didn't get a lot of the actors. You know, it's not the old days where it was the, you know, Bing Crosby and Clint Eastwood was always there and, you know, the normal actors and such. So, good tournament, though. I thought the leaderboard was condensed. It actually made for good watching, even not having anybody in the running to win.
A lot of the athletes and actors were actually playing in the LPGA on this past weekend. Like,
right.
A lot of those guys that you typically see that are like really good golfers were over there playing in the LPGA one.
Yeah, it was just to wrap up on this. I mean, look, I thought it was like tournament's getting better. And just to circle back to something you said, Wes, because Matt and I did hit on it on the pod last week. I think you've got to, with some of these tournaments, and Pebble's the perfect example, that it get elevated to that to that signature status. So just the course history, you got to be careful with it. I mean, you've got a lot of great guys coming over there and playing now. They're just great golfers that haven't played there a ton. And it's I think that's one where people like to gravitate towards some sticky course history. And it's just that's great, but they played in some fields that didn't have some of the best golfers in the world. And Rory was the perfect result of that. That's for sure.
This event probably needed to be elevated. This event needed to be elevated, too, because the fields have been, look, I benefited cashing a couple outrights, but these have been weaker fields in recent years at Pebble Beach. So it's a long time event. AT&T has sponsored this for God knows how long. So they wanted a better field, and they certainly got it. But, Kelly, you were mentioning course history. Think that might be a little bit more of importance this week for the Waste Management.
Yeah, as we head down to the stadium course down there in Scottsdale, one of the few courses on tour that I've got to play multiple times. So I've played it when at least the skeleton of the stadium was up, and then I played it when it was just completely bare. And let me tell you, it is one of the least impressive holes you will ever walk up to whenever you have in your mind what it's supposed to be, and then you walk up there and it's just nothing but the hole, and you're like, what in the hell is this? Like, it feels like you're just playing like the worst par three that you've ever played in your whole life whenever you step up into the tee box of the hole. Because
you need the atmosphere.
Yeah, it's like you have to have it. If not, you just like, oh, it's just a really straight, short par three. And there's literally nothing special about this hole at all. Like, the stadium makes the hole. But it's a cool course that should certainly test some of these guys. I mean, we know there's a gettable par four. We know all the par fives are gettable. A little bit of water that can put some danger in there and can at least make for some sort of drama here, Wes. But what are some of the key components here as they head down to Scottsdale?
Yeah, and they did renovate this, by the way, back in 2014. So the scoring hasn't really been, I think, as low as it was in like the 2000s to like early 2010s. That being said, we did have the course record get matched here last year. Nick Taylor shot a 60 in the first round, which is 11 under par. So par 71, 72, 61, pretty much average length. Does play a little bit above sea level, 1500 feet to be exact. So ball's going to travel a little bit longer, but it's not, you know, that much. It's about a 2% difference. So mid pack in terms of difficulty, I think the winning score, Nick Taylor was 21 under last year after that 10 or 11 under in the first round, but you've seen a lot of 19 unders, a lot of 17 unders. So, you know, not a pushover, but not a course I think that really is going to be a bear on these guys, especially because you haven't gotten a lot of rain there since about late August to early January. I think early January it got like a tenth of an inch or something. So that means it's going to be firm and fast, and these drives could roll through the fairways and approaches might roll off the greens into the short grass. So we'll get to that when we get to the stats a little bit later that we looked at. Fairways, rye, fescue, overseed, poa, rye, overseed, green. So not the poa that we've seen the last couple weeks at Pebble and especially at Torrey Pines, where it's a lot more bumpy. Pretty big greens, so relatively easy to hit. You've got five water holes. You've got only 67 bunkers because you've got these waste areas throughout the course. Obviously, the final four holes are kind kind of the signature part. You've got that par five at 15 with the Island Green. The Coliseum that you mentioned earlier, the par 3-16th where all the fans are raucous and loud, but it's a pretty easy hole. It's just, I think, the pressure of everybody screaming and everybody being intoxicated at that hole. Really, I think it gets started on the 17th. It's that short par four. That's drivable. That's obviously reachable from the tee for some of the bigger hitters, but you're going to be egged to go for it. You know, hey, go for the green. And it's like if you lay up a little bit and just pitch it up to about 2 feet for just an easy birdie, you feel like you're going to get booed. So you got to deal with that. And then the par four 18th is probably the hardest hole on the golf course. Water down the entire left side. Seen a lot of guys lose their chances at winning, getting into that. So if you're looking for comparable courses, if you do that a little bit, TPC Summerlin, PGA West, Stadium Course, all the courses here in Vegas, the Desert ones, Summit Club, TPC Sawgrass as well, the Nicklaus Course at PGA West, I thought were the most comparable.
Kelly, you know, speaking of that drivable par four, even though the water is there, I expect, given where we're at this point in golf, where basically all of these dudes are long, I think they're pretty much all going to go for it. I mean, I think we're probably going to be looking at 80% of the field kind of going for it here. And with that, because the interesting stat is, and I mean, these guys have access to the same things we do. Last year, the dudes that hit it in the water, like 50% of them still made par. Like they still like, well, you took a drop and then they just pitched it right up there to the damn, you know, because it's a 332 yard hole, right? I mean, so yeah. It's like the water is right up by the hole. So whatever, you take the drop, you pitch it up there, and then you still make par. So it's like a deal where we always talk about risk reward, but it's kind of like there's not a ton of risk, right? It's like all reward almost on this hole. So I expect most of them are going to go for it.
Yeah, yeah, that final three hole stretch, it's awesome, it's fun, it's or those last, you know, four holes, yeah, it's amazing. But that one's huge, makes it make or break for a lot of people. But yeah, I'm with you. It's more of a reward hole than a risk hole for sure.
So as we get into this, guys, this is each and every week we are going to be talking about our models and modeling and whatnot. We use different sites out there. These are not custom models that we went in and coded ourselves or anything like that. So just so you know, whenever we say what we did in our model, it is the data that we put into our model, which is really cool about what these sites have done out there. I mean, again, shout out to Betspurt, shout out to Rick Rungood, shout out to Data Golf, shout out to all these different sites out there that have done this stuff is you get the skeleton and then you put in the meat and then you put in what you think is important. And that actually weights the different stuff. And then the model spits out those golfers that you actually, from the input that you put in, are, you know, most important to you that week. So it's pretty cool how that all works out. And again, they're smarter than me and we're able to build skeletons so that guys like idiots like me can go in and put in the information and come out and get some stuff here. So Kelly, kick us off here, bud. What do you what did you weight into your stuff this week?
Oh man, back to the old trusty ball striking measure stats, and screw your putting and get it out of my face. I'm going to go back to my old lovable losers here this week. A lot of them. Look, it's a lot off the tee. You need distance. You need to be accurate too. Distance helps you the big time on this course. We talk about it being some longer par fours, par fives. You got to score on the par fives. You can reach most, basically everybody in the field can reach these par fives in two shots, but it helps a lot. We'll talk a bit about, look, there's not a lot of defense for this course. You got a few holes with water. Wind's going to be light this week. Conditions are always pretty dang nice for them to play in. So it's one of those, hey, the longer the greens will dry out, that will happen. But so it's one of those, the longer you can hit it off the tee, more of a lofted shot you'll have into the green, and you're looking for those type of guys this week, I think. So a lot of distance and accuracy off the tee, total driving, if you want to use that stat, I think that works well as strokes gained off the tee. And then approach, real focus, 125 to 200 yards, those proximity buckets. But then, look, you got some bigger, much bigger greens this week in play, opportunities gained, I'll always look at birdie or better. Par four scoring I plugged in. I did kind of change up the model a little bit from last year. Took out par fives, put in par fours. Par five scoring is going to be extremely important, but the three of them are very scoreable for pretty much the entire field, so I'm not overly concerned about that. More concerned about some of these par fours, getting it on the green and two, going up there making a putt. Did a little bit of scrambling and a little bit of approach putting, which is just, you know, get longer putts, getting it close on that to set up a second makeable putt or a makeable putt on your second shot once you're on the green. So that was pretty much everything I did this week, but heavy ball striking stats for me.
Wes, anything differ for you?
Not a lot. I did use approach, and by the way, who is number one on approach not only last year but this year, it is Scottie Scheffler. So that gives you an idea. He's number one in everybody's model. I don't care whether it's our program or everybody else. He's number one, and he should be, and that's why he's less than 3-1 to win this thing. A two-time winner. He actually led the field on approach when he won in 2023. I remember being on him actually in 2022 when he got his first win. That was the day of the Bengals-Rams Super Bowl where, you know, got a Rams future home and then got Scheffler home in his first victory. And I remember being on him. I'm like, I'm never getting him at 28-1 ever again. It's never going to happen. And it hasn't, because he's won 13 times over the last 3 years on the PGA Tour.
That's
so
insane, man.
Yeah, 13 times in three calendar years. Go from, you know, January, February 2022 to now. So, yeah, approach I felt was important. I did use some total driving because you are going to have the longest driving distance of any course on tour because it is driver heavy. You're not, you know, laying up a lot off the tee just because the rough isn't that penal and you've got elevation and it's going to be firm. So you're going to get some rollout, but you do have some water hazards and waste areas. So you still got to be a little bit accurate. So I used a little combination of total driving and also strokes gained off the tee. And then a little bit of birdie or better here, even though this isn't like a birdie fest like the Amex was a few weeks ago where, you know, you had to be close to 30 under par to end up winning the thing, but you could still go low here, as evident by Nick Taylor when he shot 60 in the first round last year, ended up beating Charlie Hoffman in the playoff. For par four scoring, I went 450 to 500 because five of the par fours are in between. And then there are two others that if you look at the scorecard, which I put in my column up at VSiN.com, there's a couple of par fours that measure at 442. So 8 yards difference. So consider those pretty much in that range, too. So that's why I felt that that was a little more important. Bogey avoidance. Just because I mentioned the hazards and I mentioned because you're going to get some rollout with not a lot of moisture on this course, you're going to get some balls that are going to roll through the fairways and into some tricky lies and some of the approaches too around the short grass, around the green. So you could get big numbers. So I used a little bogey avoidance, also scrambling. It's pretty easy. Kelly mentioned it. This is kind of a team no putt event. And I'm somebody that usually I think of the three of us, maybe I put a little bit more putting on a week to week basis in than the rest of the company here on this pod. But I didn't do it this week because you've seen some bad putters win this event. Kyle Stanley, Kevin Stadler, Matsuyama's won it twice. But he wasn't putting like he is now, certainly like he did at the Century to open the season. But these are flat greens, so I think around the green scrambling is a hell of a lot more important than putting this week. And that's pretty much what I did for the waste management.
Yeah, I went a little different just to kind of see if anything would pop for me. So we talked a little bit before we got going here, guys. Like, I mean, Scottie Scheffler is not only number one, he's like number one with a bullet. I fully expect him to be in the mix, if not win this thing. His last 4 years are T7, outright win, T3. I mean, if that tells you how he's done at this tournament, right? And so I was trying to see if anything could pop, if anything might get me on somebody else. And so I actually left out off the tee and approach and just did ball striking and just the combination of the two, just to kind of see like heavily weight, just the off the tee and approach measure blended together and see what we can get from that. I went in and did that for, because you can do these mixed condition models on both of the sites that I'm using now as well. So, you know, I did it for last 36, last 24, last 12, and blended all three of those into the model just to see who's been hitting it off the tee and getting and playing approach really, really well at the same time together. I did total driving as far as distance and accuracy. I did that for last 24 rounds, last 16 rounds, last 12 rounds, blended that together into into the model, little birdie or better, a little bogey avoidance, a little bit of scrambling, and then some of the nuanced stuff that some of the newer models out there are allowing to do. I threw in a tiny bit of eagle percentage. I threw in a tiny bit of like going for the green birdie or better, because again, all three of the par fives are gettable, and we also have that drivable par four. So I did a going for the green birdie or better percentage and threw that in there as well, just to kind of see again what I could end up getting through all of this and see if anybody that maybe wasn't obvious to me would pop through all of this. And so that's kind of where I went, because at the end of the day, he's the best player in the world. He was rounding into form in his first tournament last week. Now he's going to a course where he has destroyed the last 4 years. It's very hard in perfect conditions. By the way, the weather is supposed to be perfect down there in Scottsdale. It's very hard to see Scottie Scheffler not competing. And so I tried to do a little zigging where everybody else was zagging. So we'll see how the results end up this week. But yeah, that's like kind of how that's my approach this week with it. And, you know, we'll see if it works out.
Yeah, I like it. There's there's a 3-1 on Scheffler here in town. I got pretty close to pulling the trigger. Yeah. I very much designed my outright card to be able to jump in live on one of those top three names, Scheffler, Thomas, or Decky. I think there's still enough questions.
Who all have had good course history here, right?
Yeah, like, correct. Yeah.
Like they've all gone. Justin Thomas last 5 years, T3, T13, T8, outright four, T12. And of course, Decky's won this thing twice, T16, T42, T8, T29, T22. So not as great the last 5 years for Decky, but still, obviously, I mean, the lowest was a T42 back in 2021.
Yeah. It's look, I understand the odds that are next to Thomas and Matsuyama, considering the strength of the rest of the field, but not long enough for me to get involved with either of them pre-tournament. And Scheffler, really, it's just more the question of, all right, like, are we sure? Like he looked really good, but like second tournament, am I really going to pull the trigger pre-tournament? I think I'll just look live. Let's see. You know, he did have a little bit of some struggles around the green last week, which, that's where I think a lot of us were concerned about with him anyways. Are you coming back with the touch, the feel after having a hand surgery like that? I don't think it was really that big of a surgery, but still, there's enough concerns. And then, I don't know about you guys, the mid-range, just, man, it felt like almost everybody should be longer. I was attracted to, like, Sam Burns, I was attracted to a bit. I thought I should be getting a better price than 22-1 or something in that range on him. Straka's looked amazing. I really can't blame anybody if they wanted to go pull the trigger on Sepp Straka with how he's looked this year. But then you got Thigala, Connors, Benny On, like a bunch of guys we haven't seen really do much this year so far yet. So mid-range was pretty easy for me to pass on, and I just played a lot of bombs, boys.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Other guys with obviously good course history here. Nick Taylor won last year. He was second the year before that. You got Sahith Thigala, who two out of the last 3 years has finished inside the top five here. Jordan Spieth, actually, even when he hasn't been in form, in 2021 was T4, and then he's been T6 the past two seasons here, which again, that's raises a question for us to talk about a little bit later with all of this, is how much do you want to weight that course history compared to current form with all of that. But yeah, there's some interesting stuff here in this one as well. But Wes, let's go ahead and get to it here and start ticking off some of these plays that made our card.
Yeah, one thing, too, I did want to mention before we get to that about the weather. You were talking about the perfect conditions. That might be good to actually subdue the crowd, because the crowd got a little unruly last year because there was some weather down there, and a lot of the players complained about it. So we'll see how much the Thunderbirds, who are the organizers of this event down there in Phoenix, or Scottsdale, rather, are able to police that. You're still going to get some rowdiness, though. It's Super Bowl weekend, and it's the Phoenix Open. So I expect you'll get some... You'll probably get a little bit of crude behavior from at least a couple people, but hopefully we have another good tournament. Selections, first one, actually, Kelly just mentioned, if I'm going to take on Scotty, I'm going to oppose him with one of his best friends who's had some success here, and that's Sam Burns at 28-1, third here last year, sixth here 2 years ago. did not play putt very well at Pebble Beach on Sunday. Ended up, I think, T22 was his final finishing position. But I think going away from the POA is going to suit him well. This isn't quite Bermuda, so we don't have a Bermuda Burns situation here. We're going to get that probably in Florida. Maybe I'm premature here, and maybe, you know, once we get to March is where I want to target Sam Burns. But I think he can attack this place with the driver. He led the field here for strokes gained off the tee in his third place finish. So Sam Burns at 28-1. Another good buddy, good mate of Scotty Scheffler is Tom Kim at 33-1, who, if you were watching the Sunday coverage, he was probably going to finish tied for third with Rose and those guys, but ended up hitting a ball in the water. T7 is where he finished, but went back to the old blade putter, which I thought was very good for him. He was top 10 in strokes gained putting last week at Pebble Beach. Two of his three PGA Tour victories, keep in mind, are at TPC Summerlin in Las Vegas. So he's well acquainted with the desert golf. He's very good on approach, typically. So, you know, a ball striker's course fits a good ball striker, and that's what Tom Kim is. And if the crowd does get a little rowdy, I think he'll relish it. If you've seen him at the last President's Cup, and then at the TGL, if you've been watching that over the past few weeks, like, he really gets into it. He likes when the crowd has energy, because I think it energizes him. So Tom Kim, 33-1.
Wes, one of the things they were talking about on the broadcast with Kim as well, and I mean the stats obviously were in the infancy of this season, so the stats will bear it out a little bit later. But I think it was Colton Ost who said he was talking to Tom Kim, and he has like picked up a significant amount of club speed, club head speed in the off season. That was one of his real big initiatives, was to get a little bit longer off of the tee, because, you know, that's one of the things we kept saying about Tom Kim. We're like, hey, we kind of like him on these positional courses because he's one of the guys that isn't quite as long as everybody else. And then I just anecdotally saw it this past week, though there was, you know, again, that course isn't really built for bombers. So I'm actually curious to see what this looks like this week with Tom Kim and see if that does actually come to fruition, because that was something that he said he spent a lot of time in the offseason doing.
Yeah. I certainly hope so as well. And look, you mentioned those positional courses like, you know, Sedgefield and those places like that, where he always, I think, really plays well. But, you know, didn't get that win last year. So you've got a lot of guys like that I think are trying to figure some things out. Right now, not doing great off the tee. The approaches are still very good. I think 30th overall. So he's in like the top 15 in this week's field. So I think he's still going to be very sharp with his iron. So Tom Kim at 33-1. And then I probably did do a little more mid-range. So you guys, I think, are more bomb heavy. I'm a little more mid-range heavy this week. Sahith Fagala, 44-1. I'm ignoring the poor start. He hasn't finished better than 36th in any of his four events. This could be boom or bust here, but I'm banking on the course form. Fifth here last year, third here in 2022, which Scotty eventually won. Sahith, if you remember that event, actually probably should have won and just really made a miss at the 17th hole, and then Scotty ends up beating Patrick Cantlay in the playoffs. So, you know, I don't have a lot of data to back up Sahith. It's kind of more of a hunch. 40-ish to 45 range is where you can find him. I'm going back on a guy that I did use on the card last week that was very disappointing. That's Maverick McNealy at 65-1. T6 last year here. He was only T40th at Pebble Beach because he was terrible, actually, both on and around the greens, which is really surprising considering that he grew up there at Pebble Beach and their family still has a house where the 16th hole is the backyard. Lost six strokes combined, putting and around the green. However, there was at least a silver lining. He was fourth last week in ball striking off the tee plus approach is how you calculate that. Only behind Rory, Taylor Pendrith, and Scotty Scheffler, who led the field for approach, of course. So willing to give him another shot. He's a Vegas resident. Same price, actually, this week as where he was with Pebble Beach, which is certainly stronger at the top because you had a signature event. So Matt McNealy, 65-1. Another guy not in really great form, but I think the course form could be good, and that's Kurt Kitayama at 70-1. Eighth here last year, sixth for off the tee, 13th off the tee last season overall on the PGA Tour, or actually to start this season, I should say, 10th on approach last season for the entire calendar year of 2024. Another guy that's not a really good putter. but he's tended to putt well here. He's got two events. I think he finished 23rd on debut and then eighth here last year, where he's always gained over a stroke per round on the green. So tends to like these greens. So I'm going to go with that. UNLV guy played desert golf, obviously. So Kurt Kitayama, 70-1. And then also another 70-1, Billy Horschel, who's never really contended here, even though he's had a couple top 10s and a couple top 25s. But he tends to be a guy that, like, when he gets a top 10 finish, like, when he gets good finishes, he puts them back to back, and he is really good in short spurts, you know, over 4, 5, 6 week spans. And I'm going to say he's going to be again T9 last week at Pebble, second low round in Sunday's final round, shot a 66. I believe Adam Scott was the low at 64. Another guy who I think likes the raucous crowds, even though he was the one that kind of said something like, hey, we got to get a little control of these guys. But you've seen him at the TGL, and he did his little dance when he was introduced. So Horschel is a guy that I think does relish this event. So 71 on Horschel, and then Minwoo Lee, 75-1. Pair of 17ths to start the year in Dubai and Pebble Beach. Last week at Pebble, he was eighth on the approach, but he really couldn't find the fairway. So could be a little worrisome here, but the driver is usually the best club in his bag. He was fifth on the tour last season for strokes gained off the tee. So a couple of these guys that aren't regular guys, I played most of my card are guys that have good experience here and good finishes here, but there were a couple guys that I think are very young in terms of playing here. I was down between like Minwoo Lee and Rasmus Højgaard, but I ended up on Minwoo at 75-1.
Yeah. You mentioned Rasmus Højgaard, not on my card either, but I think it's worth mentioning. So is inside the top. Where did I?
Both Højgaards this week, right?
I was just looking at it.
Yeah, both of them are in here this week.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's in the top of basically like inside the top 20, really, of all basically all the models that I did, which I thought was interesting. Didn't pull the trigger on him, but I mean worth mentioning to people out there. I mean, whether they want to include him in their card and or if they want to. If they want to play like DFS and stuff like that, you got to come up with six golfers to make a team out of there. So he did pop in mine. Kelly, what did your card look like?
Yeah, just a couple outrights on the card. Again, I would love to get in on Scheffler. Justin Thomas would be number two, and Hideki would be number three. I'd love to get involved with probably one of them live. But yeah, for outrights, it starts with Nick Taylor, 70-1. This is one, Wes, like you, sure, he rated out for me probably mid-20s, 30s in that range. I usually don't love it. I'm usually look for those guys that are kind of inside my top 20 and way off where odds are at, but Taylor's 70-1 out there on him for an outright price. I just can't. He's a tough guy to figure out. We talked a little bit about this last week with Tom Kim or 2 weeks ago, Matt, right? Where it's like, just bet an outright on him or don't bet anything. You know, don't bet anything else. I'm just going with an outright. But he's, I mean, Jesus, it's T33 at Pebble this year, T12 at the Amex. He won the Sony. In the past 2 years here, he's won the dang event and finished T2. So I'm not going to pass up on that at 70-1. I'll roll with Nick Taylor this weekend. Next up, what a guy I have played a lot over the years, Gary Woodland. Let's go. Welcome back to the Kelly Bidlin card. 115-1 on Gary Woodland. Played a top 20 on him as well, plus 330. Man, I thought he rated out very highly for me. He's a bomber off the tee, about second in distance in the field this week. Great ball striker these past couple events. Finished T22 at Pebble, T16 at Sony in his two starts this season. He gained on putting in both of those starts. Not bad on putting, but gained on both off the tee and on approach. He's won here before. So mm-hmm. I'm going to get back on the Gary Woodland train here and see what happens. Played an outright on him and then a top 20. A guy I really did like this week, especially at a long-ass price, that's for sure. Okay, top 10s. On a couple fun ones with high upside, Wes Reynolds already brought up one of them. Minwoo Lee. Oh, boy, did I go down the rabbit hole on Minwoo Lee this afternoon. Because you're right, Wes. A couple of good finishes that I don't think maybe were on everybody's radar these early weeks of the season. And, you know, a guy we talked a lot about last year, waiting for him to show up. I think the stats are a little tough to parse through. You brought it up. Great approach numbers, though, in two events. And that's kind of been the one area that's been holding him back. He's great everywhere else except for really the iron. So I'm gonna try a top 10 with him, 5-1 on that. And then I'm going back to Luke Clanton, too. I think this is a course that should be more fit for his game as well. So I didn't play outrights on those guys. I do think we see more of a class player usually come out on top at this event. So I didn't go full outrights on them, but top 10s in that 5-1 range on Luke Clanton and Minwoo Lee. Still going to try to play these guys before they go and win something and numbers get real short on them all of a sudden. So those two for top 10, small. And then top 20s is where I sunk more of my money in here. Already mentioned Woodland. And then a couple other ball strikers, man. One guy I used to play a ton too. I feel like I'm playing some of the IR team with Woodland and the next guy, Charlie Hoffman. Back on the Hoff this year. Let's go. T25 at the Farmers, T5 at Amex. He's played some really good golf already this season. Has gained big on approach, approach and off the tee. Yes, I need a spike putting week from him. Putting has not been good this year. It's not his strong suit. Second here last year, T4, 14 the year before that, though. He plays very well at this course. So top 20 on Charlie Hoffman. You can find that at over 3-1. Played that. And then Hoagie, another guy, right? Great with the ball striking, struggles with the putting. I'm playing the top 20 with him, plus 265. Just trying to get one, a couple of these top 20, top 10s home, make it a profitable week. But Hoagie, I mean, again, T17 at Pebble, T29 at Amex, T45 at Sony, T8 at Century. He's been consistent as hell to start this year. Gained major on approach at all. Not that big of a surprise. He's one of the best iron players out there. But he gained in putting in three of those four tournaments. Tom Hoagie gaining a putting is a scary idea. So that combined with two top 20 finishes here in the past 3 years, I like him for a strong top 20 play this weekend. You're getting plus 260 on that. So I really like those top 20s. Messed around with Woodland and Nick Taylor on the outrights, and then again, looking just for a high upside payout of Luke Clanton and Minwoo Lee.
Before we get to Matt, I did want to say something. Yeah. Sorry, Matt. I was going to say, I just want to mention something about Luke Clanton, one of Kelly's placement market bets. Clanton, I believe, had to get that 1 point because they do this accelerated point system for a PGA Tour card. I believe all Luke Clanton, from what I was reading at PGAtour.com, he just has to make the cut this week. And I believe that he secures his PGA Tour card. So just a little bit of nugget if you're using him for any type of placement or make or miss cut props, if those are available to you.
Great. Yeah, that is that guy has just been unbelievable. So good. I played all long shots this week. And so with that, like, there's more than usual because it's less of a monetary output on all of them than usual. So I share one with Wes. I also played Kurt Kitayama.
Full disclosure, he was probably last left off my card. He rated out very highly for me. I think that the more recent tournament stats, I was like, I don't know if I want to get fooled by this stuff. So I did leave him off, but I really like him as well. I thought I was going to have him as a top 20.
In the 36-round model, he was second to Scotty in one of my models. In the 24-round, he was third behind Scotty and Sepp Straka. And then switching sites, like even using a whole different site with a whole different algorithm, he still was 10th in the model that I put together over there. So again, a guy that's way out at 60, if he's coming in that high in all the different versions of the models, too much for me to pass up for Kitayama. Again,
he's played well here.
Yeah, there. And like I said, I just put a heavy emphasis on ball striking. And, his ball striking numbers are inside the top 10 in the field. So I do share that one with Wes. I also share another player, but it's a placement market. I didn't play an outright on Billy Horschel, but I did play a top 30 on Billy Horschel, plus 130. So you're still getting plus money on Horschel at a top 30 market. So You've already heard Wes talk about Kitayama and Horschel, so I don't need to go there. The only other guy that I do share, I have Sam Burns, but I have him first round leader. I don't have for the full tournament. I'm done with Sam Burns going out and playing three awesome rounds and playing one terrible round. Like, it is the worst.
I was hoping
you
were going to be the Sam Burns whisperer this week.
Dude, it's the worst feeling. It's the worst feeling to have a Sam Burns ticket and go like, oh, he just lit the course up for 2 days. And then he goes and has that one shit round. And then he comes back and lights the course up again on the fourth day. But it doesn't matter because he's fell too far behind on the shit round. It's just like, bro. It's like if he could just learn some sort of consistency from Scottie Scheffler, which is funny. That's what, if you guys remember, that's what Rory actually talked about post win this past week, was saying he went back and just studied Scottie Scheffler and watched Scottie Scheffler. And he's like, the dude just goes out and like, he isn't trying to be a hero every time. And he's just like playing steady golf. And he's like, whatever. And Rory basically said, like, I was trying to have too many hero moments. And like, if you just play steady golf, Sam Burns, just do that. Like, quit. Like, just do that. You're going to start winning a whole bunch of tournaments.
Yeah,
like, but
coach up your boys then. But Sam Burns and Tom Kim, right? Jeez, come on, man. They need to be a little bit more consistent.
So I just first round leadered Sam Burns. So those
I like
three,
that play. I might actually do something like that. Those three guys, we know Sam Burns can score, right? When he gets hot,
he's number one in the field. Birdie or better, every time. Like, it doesn't, like, he scores better than most of the people on the tour. He scores better than Scotty does. You know, it's just, he gives them back. that's the only problem. He gives them back. So those guys we've already talked about. So let's go to the shortest guy on my card, and that is Corey Connors. And this is not, this is not your typical what you would think Corey Connors type course. I know we typically love to have Corey Connors on the more positional courses and not one where driving distance comes into play all that much, but man, Corey Connors, I couldn't ignore where he was popping up in a lot of these statistical categories that I was going after. I mean, Connors, you're starting to talk about, you know, off the tee over the last 24 rounds. I mean, that's six tournaments, you know. Fourth in this field in strokes gained off the tee. He's second in birdie or better percentage in the last 24 rounds. Like, there's just a lot that I like about Corey Connors. And he's eighth overall in one of the models. That's with him being 128th in the field in scrambling. Like, if he wasn't as bad in scrambling as he was, which is one of the categories that I threw in, he'd probably be in the top five. But it's just he's so far down. But you can see, I mean, he's a dude that can spike, you know. And so Corey Connors, like, look, moderate success here, not a ton, but moderate success, at least with him. Let's go to who's the next shortest. A guy I played last week and just kind of like played with his food. Didn't really get it all done, but wasn't terrible. I'm going back to Bob McIntyre, a guy that was literally, you know, as high as fifth in one of the models that I put together over there. He's just inside the top 30 in just like every category you put in. Like, he's not like at the very top of anything. He's just kind of steady Eddie. And maybe if he can, you know, maybe peak a little bit this week. But you go in another guy in Bob McIntyre that we saw last year does have it in him to go win tournaments, right? Like, can get it done. And you even see, as Kelly's putting on the screen, if you're watching at home,
it's a lot of green, bro.
Yeah, like over in Europe. I mean, you can see there's T5s and T12s and T7s and stuff like that and all that. And we remember, he did win outright last year. I think Bob McIntyre is a guy that might be able to pop. So Bob McIntyre outright for me as well. Austin Eckroat is my last kind of like normal-ish outright that I played. Austin Eckroat just like blew the model up. Like, I don't know what the algorithms love about Austin Eckroat, but they loved Austin Eckroat. In the model here for me, I think a lot of it has to do, as I kind of dig in, like I said, I really heavily weighed ball striking and total driving, in which Austin Eckroat is inside the top 17 in all of those categories. And then the birdie or better percentage has him up inside the top 8 in both of the different things that I ran in on him. Boomer bust, dude.
And by the way, the blank spaces are the event that he won, was my last outright, at least for 2024, down in Mexico, the Worldwide Technology Championship, which doesn't have strokes gain data readily available. So, that was the event he won.
Guess what? This one that's a bunch of red after it, you don't really have to worry about this is too much this week. Yeah. So
this is the stat profile. And guys, if you're listening to the audio version of this, we're also recording this for YouTube, so you can go in and watch some of the stuff that we're talking about. But like, this is the stat profile that I like on a guy if I'm playing him at 90-1, right? Mm-hmm. It's like he won a tournament, T17, T15, cut. T13. It's kind of like a guy that's 90-1. I want this stat profile, right? Like, I want the peaks and valleys because he's not your top 20 guy that you play. He's not your top 30 guy. He's not your top 40 guy. He's either going to play really well and score really well, or he's going to get cut. you know, and that's fine. Like it's 90 to one. So it is what it is. It's mainly a top 20 bet, a very, very small outright in on the Siwoo at 63 to one. Siwoo Kim, another guy that is just really, really, really high up in all of the versions of the model that I ran as well. You kind of go in and you start to see what Siwoo has put together and you're like, oh, okay. I mean, this guy is like last 12 rounds, he's green across the board. Last 24 rounds, he's pretty much green across the board, like losing 0.09 strokes around the green. That's fine. Last 50 rounds, pretty much green across the board. So it's a guy that, again, you're going to need him to run pure, like for sure. I mean, he doesn't have the same skill sets of all these other guys that are in the field. Specifically, if he's not hitting the greens, he scrambles like ass. But like, if he can keep it on the greens, I think Siwoo can be in contention. But I said mainly a top 20 play for me on him, but did throw a tiny bit on the outright for him. Guys, this last one, Wes, you say sometimes you just play a gut play. I did a gut play this week, which I rarely do, but man, 95 to one on Max Homa. And it's just like you go in, played horrible last year. He knows he played horrible last year, really worked on his game. The equipment changed stuff. He had to play the fall swing. And you start to look at those fall numbers, right? It's like the Zozo, he was T27. He went over and played one of the Euro Tour, T14. He was T26 at the Century. And then you get to like the Farmers and AT&T. And like the thing is those are weather events. And like when you're trying to find your game, that's not where you find your game, right? Like you're not finding your game when there's 25, 30 mile an hour gusts and things and stuff like that. So I'm kind of okay that he didn't do well there. I'm looking back at the stuff before. I know the talent's there. We know the talent is there. 95 to one was just too much. Again, it's just a gut thing for me as a guy that can like relish the atmosphere of something like this as well. He's a cool dude and likes kind of like interacting with the fans and all of that stuff and whatnot. So there's my gut play. Maybe the only one I'll make all year, but that's damn it. 95 to one on Max Homa. I'm playing him,
man. Him finishing.
He's got market support. Well, I was going to say he's got market support. He's got market support too, because he was an underdog, because in a lot of the shops he's matched up with Charlie Hoffman, who of course Charlie played very well at Torrey Pines a couple weeks ago, solid at the Amex, and then was the runner up who lost in the playoff to Nick Taylor we mentioned earlier. But Max Homa's getting a lot of support in that matchup. We're like, really? He's an underdog to Charlie Hoffman? So, you know, even though Charlie's got really good form here. So Homa for me probably is going to make like my maybe my top 20, my top 30 placement markets. But I'm not sneezing at that play necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, like I backed it up with the top 10 and that comes in at like 7 to 1 on him, you know, on a top 10, like 7 to 1 there. Round out the card. Doug Gim, top 20 at 4 to 1. Doug Gim, this is just strictly a steady Eddie guy. I don't know the win equity is there. I don't think the win equity is there for Doug Gim at all in this. But, like, Doug Gim is going to finish 16th in this tournament. There. I just said it. It is. Like, Doug Gim is going to finish 16th. They're going to show, like, four of his shots on the broadcast all 4 days. Like, you're not even going to see Doug Gim. You weren't even going to know he played the tournament, right? And then you're going to be like, look at the final leaderboard. He's going to be T16. Like, I promise you. Like, this is what Doug Gim does. So, I played Doug Gim. Top 20. The only
he's
other
17th in one model I just pulled up to.
Yeah.
So your T16 sounds about right.
the only other thing that I might do, and it's strictly because like in the very short term model, if you go in and like if I exclude some of the like fancy statistical categories that like there's not, unless you've been playing a long time, you just don't have a lot of data around it. Max McGreevy is super, super high in my models. Number one in total driving last 24 rounds, number one total driving last 12 rounds, 29th in ball striking last 16 rounds, top 12 in par five birdie or better, like cetera, just stuff like that. He's like 300 to one. So I don't know. I mean, whatever, you put $20 on it. I mean, like it's not, you know, that big of a deal.
He had to go through another Monday guy qualifying, I thought I would at least actually. Throw out there. Yeah. He's a Monday qualifier. Yeah, just kind of one of those guys to get in this too. Event.
Yeah, just people who are looking for like the super, super bomb guy out there that rated well, he's at least a dude that was a super bomb that rated well for me. So Again, as always, all of these plays you can find over on VSiN.com, VSiN.com/picks. If you're not a VSiN.com Pro subscriber, we're running a special right now for $59 off of a year-long subscription. So go in and take advantage of that at VSiN.com/subscribe, where you not only get that picks page, but you get all the daily articles, you get a video feed, you get all the different stuff that we do, the betting guides and stuff like that. And of course, there's this little thing that's happening on Sunday. So, you know, maybe you want to go in and take a look at what everybody is playing in that. What do y'all think? What's the over under on how many plays are going to be on the page for the Super Bowl? 1,000?
Oh boy.
Probably gonna be 1,000, right?
I've never even thought to think of something like that. So yeah, probably.
Yeah, I mean, between all the guests,
it's a good number. Over under 999.5.
Yeah. Because I mean, like between all the hosts, all the guests, all the whatever, so like that, like there's, I mean, probably 1,000.
I'm going to go under 1,000, but it can't be by much. It cannot be by much.
And I know the focus is on the Super Bowl, but keep in mind, we've got, of course, this event, the Waste Management Phoenix Open. We've got like 1,000 college basketball games on the Saturday before the Super Bowl. You have NBA. You have, I don't know, is there a fight card this weekend?
There probably
is.
There's
UFC. Yes, there's UFC.
Yeah.
Is Butterbean fighting?
Yeah, I think overseas. So there's a ton of stuff up there.
Yeah. Dricus du Plessis is defending his title down there. So you can check that out as well. I'll tell you right now, if Jordan Spieth wins this tournament, I'm going to hate myself. If you go long term data and like you don't go short term stuff, it's like he's like right up there with Scotty on like in all this stuff. I can't do it.
Do you need for him to like, okay, he's back?
Yeah, I'll miss out on Spieth, but it's fine.
I didn't dwell on it, but I noticed the same thing, Matt. You're just like, wait, what? Like, okay, so there's not a lot of good here, but then I go and look at, okay, T6, T6. Yeah. I thought he was playing like crap. Yeah. Like, what are T4, we talking about?
T7, T9. I know. It's just what I'm not. It's okay. I'll miss out on it. I don't care.
I like rooting against Spieth, so it's cool.
I know. No one hates Jordan Spieth more than Kelly Bidlin. Like that, there's nobody on planet
just
Earth.
Just shut up and play. It's like Tom Kemp, just putt. Just freaking putt. What are you thinking about?
I might be close because he's beaten me on a few would have been very lucrative winners having gone against him, and then he finds a way to make some miracle shot.
Like, he has two ex-girlfriends that he broke up with over text that hate him less than Kelly Bidlin. Like, I mean, it's unbelievable how much Kelly hates Jordan Spieth.
But he's like the average Joe on the golf course. Anytime he screws up or if he hits a pretty good shot, there's always got to be an explanation afterward of what he did wrong and yada, yada. It's like, oh, my God, just shut up and go hit your next shot. Jesus.
Well, that being said, I will say this. If he does win, I'm going to be very upset.
I'm sure he's a great guy. I'm sure we'd be good friends, me and Jordan. But
he seems to like to hang out and have a few cocktails.
Hey, maybe he hates me on TV. It's okay. Like, that's okay. We're allowed to do that.
Meet me in the clubhouse. I don't want to play golf with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's an all-day thing. It's an all-day thing.
We can have a drink together.
Be in the group behind me or something. And then, I'll be waiting in the clubhouse for you. We'll have a cocktail. It'll be great.
No, don't be in the group behind me. That'll be that asshole that's like, no, we're waiting. We're waiting here. And I'm like, shut up. I got to find my ball.
No, you don't want to. No, because you don't like. If he's in front of you, you're going to see all the mannerisms and all the stuff. And you're just going to be tilted the whole time. So you want him behind you.
He'll be like two holes clear of me. I'll give him a head start drinking at the bar. He's going to need that anyways. We both know that.
Oh, it's fun stuff. All right, guys, if you hadn't done so already, if this is your first time, find us over on YouTube. Awesome. Appreciate it. Go ahead, hit that subscribe button. Help grow this channel. Everything we do on the channel here, absolutely free. Also, if this is just the audio version, subscribe, rate, review. We do appreciate all of your support here for Wes, for Kelly. I am Matt. Good luck on all your waste management bets.